Today marks the first anniversary of a series of segments that I began airing on Women's Focus last year. In fact, on January 22nd, Revolutionary Soup. It's been a series of wide-ranging conversations about food, the relationships, the bonds that are created and sustained in the growing, the preparation, and eating of food. It's about our cultures, our traditions. It's about society, about issues of food insecurity that allows our quote-unquote greatest democracy in the world to allow so many of its citizens to go hungry. Food justice issues are big, and I'll be having more conversations about that as I continue the series this year. It's also about so many beautiful things that are happening in our community, certainly so in New Mexico. More people are buying local food at the growers' markets, more people planting their own vegetable gardens, including a number of schools in the Albuquerque Public Schools, giving young people the glorious experience of seeing a vegetable grow from seed, many of whom have never seen a tomato on the vine before. There's also a movement to rethink school lunches, to provide fresh produce grown locally, for example, in school cafeterias. All of it is exciting, and I plan to continue to bring many more women to discuss these kind of issues and much, much more. And why the name Revolutionary Soup? Well, it's a bit of a long story. And how that name came to be, I'll just say this for now. One reason is because soup is often the food that comforts many of us in all kinds of weather. It brings people together around the table. It encourages us to sit and spend quality time with each other and ourselves. Pair that with more and more people starting their own garden or joining a community garden. All signals that a quiet revolution is growing with attention being paid to some important basics in life. So to mark this one-year anniversary of Revolutionary Soup, I have some great guests this afternoon. In a little while, I'll be welcoming Yashoda Nadu, the founder of Annapurna World Vegetarian Cafe. And speaking of anniversaries, this is the 10th anniversary of Annapurna, and I thought it would be great to finally have a discussion about Ayurveda on this show, to talk about the healing and delicious foods, such as those introduced to diners by Yashoda, utilizing the ancient principles of Ayurvedic medicine. So Yashoda will be joining me just after 10:30 or so. In October of this last year, Gloria Zamora was a guest on this show. She's the author of the book Sweet Nata, published by UNM Press, about growing up in rural New Mexico. It's a lovely memoir about family traditions, providing intimate glimpses into the daily struggles and triumphs that turn a family into a community, as well as a wonderful picture of Native New Mexican culture and history. And for this anniversary of Revolutionary Soup, I invited Gloria again, and I had a wonderful time recording Gloria with her sister and mother earlier this week, which I'm going to play for you right now. Last month, I scheduled a feature about Hanukkah on the show, which included talking about potato latkes, a traditional holiday food for Hanukkah, which often involves family members or friends grating lots of potatoes and chopping onions in the kitchen. Then I got this idea that I wanted to have some women talking about the tradition of making tamales for Christmas. And when I first conceived the idea of Revolutionary Soup as a segment on Women's Focus, I was thinking of the richness of the culture and the traditions in New Mexico. And one of the things that excited me was the idea of having women on talking about that particular tradition and its connection to family. I acknowledged it was kind of a last-minute idea, and so when I asked Gloria if she could come, she wasn't available. She and I wound up talking, though, on the phone after Christmas, and she shared with me the stories of her family's tradition of tamale making. And I was so completely engaged in her stories. They were so delightful. I knew I had to have her back on the show sometime. So for this first anniversary of Revolutionary Soup, Gloria is in the studio with us, and joining her is her sister, Dolores Tafoya, and a surprise guest, because I didn't expect her here, and I'm really excited, their mother, Irene Tafoya. So thank you so much for being here. And today we're going to talk about two traditional dishes, pozole and chico soup. So, you know what? I wanted to start out by asking you what some of your earliest memories of being in the kitchen, either as a very young observer or perhaps anxious to help but not quite ready yet age-wise, or actually partaking as an assistant to your mom or grandmother? Gloria?
One of my earliest memories is really in Corrales with my mom, in mom's kitchen. I don't remember her teaching me how to make tortillas, but we started making tortillas very young. I think I was 8 years old when I learned to make tortillas. And we were rolling tortillas, and they wouldn't look round and pretty like mama's, but they tasted very good, and that's the way we all have learned. We have taught even our nieces to make tortillas and our grandchildren. And to me, since I learned at eight, that's the good time to start teaching them.
And what about you, Dolores? You're an older sister?
I'm an older sister, but what I'm thinking of is a particular time that I was helping my father make red chili on the wood stove. And I was so anxious to be really involved in the cooking of the red chili, and I knew that salt was part of the red chili. So we were on the wood stove, well, not on it, but standing by the wood stove. I was a little girl. I couldn't reach the salt, which was on the shelf at the top of the stove. And so on tippy toes, I reached up and with one finger tried to get the salt to come down. And what happened to that salt? It fell into the pot of red chili. Thus, I had this face full of red chili, and also it was hot, and the chili was hot. But you know what? My father cleaned me up real quickly. I don't even remember really crying. I just remember being afraid. Uh-huh. And so cooking has always been major in our family. Being around the stove at any time, making tortillas. I, too, learned to make tortillas at a really young age. And we used to love to talk about the tortillas, what state they were. I think that's how we practiced learning about geography.
What state they? You mean the shape of the tortilla?
The shape of the tortilla was. Yes.
That's great.
Which state? Texas was very popular.
So, Irene, do you remember these experiences that Gloria and Dolores are talking about?
Yes, I remember. Uh-huh. They were always in the kitchen trying to help, and I really needed help because I had a lot of kids after them.
How many kids altogether?
Well, I had seven.
Mm-hmm.
And Dolores was my oldest, and then Tony, and then Gloria. So they always helped in the kitchen and everywhere else.
So you grew up in Mora?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And what are your early memories of being a young girl and being in your mother's kitchen?
We'd go to the mountains, because we were right close to the mountains. We'd go out there and pick piñon. Or just, and my daddy had a cornfield, and we'd go out there and pick the corn and can it, or peas, or whatever we had. We always canned our own veggies over there.
Did you help your mother cook early on, or no? Or this was just your mother's kitchen?
Well, yeah, I helped a little bit. I learned how to bake bread when I was a little girl. But we hardly ever made tortillas because my daddy couldn't digest tortillas. So I had to learn to make tortillas when I got married. I knew how to bake bread, but tortillas, yeah.
So we're going to talk about pozole and chicos. I'm interested in foods, and I don't know if it's the case in your family for sure or not, where lots of people participate in one shape or form. So let's talk a little bit about pozole and the tradition of it in your family. And certainly pozole is a very traditional food. Most people know it through, I certainly didn't when I was living in New York until I moved here, that it's a dish that is prepared and served usually on Christmas Eve. And I also learned by doing a little bit of reading that it's a ceremonial dish for celebrating life's blessings. So, Dolores, why don't you talk to us about pozole? Pozole and pozole in your family, in the Tafoya family.
Pozole, for Christmas, it's become quite traditional that I make the pozole on Christmas Eve. And I make it kind of different than other people. There are several ways of making pozole, but my preferred method is to use patitas, that's pig's feet, and pork skins and the pozole corn. I start it early in the morning. Well, not that early, about 11 o'clock, because we're going to eat probably about 7. So I cook it a really long time.
Are you talking about the larger family? So
the large, well, if we're going to have a gathering at my mom's house, there's going to be 30 or 40 people there.
And you make the pozole.
So I make the pozole. And so I put it to cook early in the morning. And everyone who comes in will lift up the cover and look at it and see where it's at, and sometimes we'll take a little spoon and taste it, or a little bit of corn to see if it's cooked yet, stir it around. Everyone gets involved in looking at the pozole. Is it ready yet? Is it soup yet?
So before we talk more about the preparation of it, can you talk a little bit about the importance of and the presence of this dish in this part of the country in the Southwest?
Well, first of all, corn was an easy access food here, and so since corn is easy to get, that was a major fill up food, and everyone just loves it.
It's been, I think pozole has been for what, centuries? This has been a dish that comes from, I guess, Native American, Mexican, and what else?
I'm not sure if it dates back to the Aztecs or not, but it has been around for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And as far as the history of it, I think that we didn't study the history of it. We just accepted it, right? Mm-hmm. And it was passed down through generations. And so we just use it from that. So as far as it being blessed food and like you read at the beginning, I'm not familiar with that. You know, I'm just familiar with what we used it for and how we appreciate it and the customs
right.
that we have.
Dolores.
My grandmother made pozole in our early years when we were under, say, 15 years old. We used to go to Atrisco, to my grandmother's, for Christmas Eve. And we'd go to Mass first, and then after Mass, we'd have the pozole. Mother still has the oyon that my grandmother used to make the pozole in. And I thought that was the kind of pan you used, and only that kind. That's what made the pozole really, really good,
What kind of pan is it?
It was a big, just a huge olla.
Yeah, it was made out of
It's steel.
Steel, I think it was.
Yeah. It's a steel pan.
Kind of an iron pan.
An iron steel pan, and it just was, it made the pozole really rich. And I think growing up, I felt like, oh my gosh, when is this Mass going to be over so we can have the pozole?
Because we went to midnight Mass, and then we ate, and then we opened presents. So we were up till 2 in the morning.
Or later.
Yeah.
This is Women's Focus that you're in tune to on KUNM. My name is Carol Boss, and in the studio with us are the two sisters, Gloria Zamora and Dolores Tafoya, and their mother, Irene Tafoya. And these are three very expressive women. You should see their hands. They're really engaged in what they're talking about. And I'm just going to ask them to be careful not to bang their hands on the table because it reverberates into the mic. And I know that's a really hard thing to do. But you see how I'm expressing now? I'm taking my hands off the table and I'm moving those hands. So just as a little warning.
Thank you.
So let's talk about because I really, for the years that I've been here, I never really understood not what the dish pozole is, but what the pozole corn is and how that, what happens to regular corn to make it into pozole corn. Irene, can you talk about that?
Yes, because I used to see my mother-in-law making the pozole corn. She used to put it in a big pot and put some lime in it and cure it for, I don't remember how many days. And then she'd wash it and wash it and wash it until it was ready to cook.
What does the lime do?
I don't know. I never asked her.
It makes it puff up.
Yeah, I think so. I think that would make it.
Because the corn is not naturally that big. And so the lime cures it, for one, and also makes it puff up.
So we should be clear that we're talking about powdered lime, not the kind of lime that you buy in the produce department.
Lime. Yeah,
right.
Uh-huh.
Which is really interesting because I never realized that before.
Yeah. Yeah, we used to use a lot of lime when I was young, but I don't remember exactly for what. But I remember my mother-in-law using that for the pozole.
Now, I read somewhere, and I don't know how definitive and accurate this is, but somebody was writing about pozole and said that the powdered lime and the water was kind of a way to replicate the ancient preservation of corn in limestone caves.
Never heard of
it. I'm passing on some information. Hopefully this is accurate information that I found.
I'm not sure it's the lime that makes the soup thick or if because corn is a wheat. But when you make chicos and you make it, it comes out soupy, where with pozole it comes out thick, almost like stew.
Well, that thing that I was reading from that I discovered online was it says that after several hours after being in the powdered lime and water, that the corn kernels swell up, they become swollen, and then the liquid is able to evaporate and the kernels dry.
I don't remember after that what she did, but yeah, she put it to... I mean, she took all the liquid off and put it to dry, but I don't know how long or what, because she did it all.
Now, Irene, you said something before we actually began this conversation and went on air. You said it wasn't until you were married that you made
a pozole, and ate it, too, because we used to use chicos instead of pozole.
Right, we're going to talk about chicos in a little bit. So, so the whole, what is it, Dolores, about that whole procedure of having family around and making a dish and that anticipation? I just love that image of everyone checking the pot every so often to see, is it ready yet? Is it ready yet?
Because we love to eat together. Eating brings us together, brings our lives together. That's where the stories, if anyone read Gloria's book, Sweet Nata, that's where the stories started, around the table. My dad used to ask us about the day, what's happening during your day. So as soon as we sit down, we bless our food, and then we start talking and eating. Eat as fast as you talk.
And Gloria would tell her story, and then when she'd come to the, what do you call it, whatever of it, she'd jump and she'd say, "Oh, and this way." She was very dramatic.
One thing that Mom was saying a while ago about the pozole that Grandma used to call it, nistamal. I wanted Mom to go over that a little bit.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, what is nistamal?
After she cooked it, she put it out to dry, and then she called it nistamal.
And
before cooking it, you know, this was after she cured it.
So how do you spell nistamal?
Nixtamale, I think.
And that almost sounds like...
Nix.
That sounds...
Nistamal, Nix. I know it had an X. Nixtamale.
That's Irene tapping on the table.
And it does sound like an Aztec.
Yeah, with that accent there, absolutely. So she would put it out there to dry?
To dry, and then when it dried, then she'd cook it with patitas or with corn, with pork and stuff.
So where did she put it to dry?
Excuse me?
Where did she put it to dry? Where was it dry?
Oh, She had a storage, you know, that little room that she had. She'd put it there.
On a screen, Mom? Or?
On a screen, yeah.
On a screen,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
So what's the difference between chicos and pozole corn?
Well, in the chicos, we don't cure in the lime. We just, I want Mom to tell us that part of how they started out with the corn. First of all, what kind of corn was it, Mama?
My daddy would raise corn. He'd raise sweet corn, and then he'd put it in the horno to cook.
And let's explain for people who don't know what the horno is.
Okay.
The
horno is made out of
adobe, right?
Adobes, like
an outdoor oven.
Like an outdoor oven, and he'd put about a wagon full of that corn, real good corn, sweet corn. And then he'd sprinkle it and cover the door of the horno.
So sprinkle it with water?
He sprinkled it with water, yeah. And he left the shucks in on it, you know.
Oh, so that's corn that's not shucked.
Yeah.
With pozole, it is shucked, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
No, it's not shucked. And he'd put it in there. Well, he had already built this fire and get the horno real, real hot, and then put all the corn in there and sprinkle it and close the little door overnight. Next day, the chicos were ready, and then we'll be there ready to eat some of those chicos.
So that means it has like a roasted or smoky flavor to it?
Yeah, uh-huh.
It does.
Sort of, yeah.
And it is steamed inside of the horno because
right.
They remove the embers. And just let it steam
he
with that
water. He removed the embers. Yeah, I forgot that. Yeah.
And Mom was telling me this morning that it was called concho corn.
Yeah.
So concho corn is different.
He used the white corn, not sweet corn, the white corn to make the chicos. And it was just white and fresh corn. And then he'd make the chicos with that.
And then what would they do after they steamed it, Mama? After they got it out of the horno, what would they do?
After they got out of the horno, they made it into braids and put it out to dry.
Yeah, I was reading somewhere that people would put like ristras.
Yeah, like a ristra, little braids, you know.
Right.
And put it out to dry. And when it was dry, they took it out of the corn husk or whatever. And then after that, my mom would cook it with pig's feet or pork or whatever. And we use that instead of pozole for Christmas also.
That's really a labor-intensive process, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
So
it
really is. When did your mother ever stop doing that? Till
no.
the day she died?
No.
She continued to do that?
They did it until they died, yeah.
And did you wind up doing that at all?
Yeah, I learned how to
As
do it,
as an adult?
Too. Yeah. Tom made me a horno one time. He and my mother did it. And we baked bread there, too, in the horno. And do the chicos in there. And one time I had the seniors over. I baked bread in the chicos first, and then baked bread in the horno. Because, you know, I belong to the center, and I brought the seniors over there to see what it was all about.
How wonderful. Dolores and Gloria, do either one of you remember this whole process?
I did watch Mama making bread in the horno and chicos, and she buys her corn or in the store or from a farmer's market. She buys her corn to make it out of sweet corn. So if people haven't grown their corn, they can still make chicos today.
Right. When we were in Medjugorje a year and a half ago, Gloria and I were walking, and
when you were where? I'm sorry.
In Medjugorje in Bosnia. And we were walking, and all of a sudden I told her, look at that. There was a whole row of chicos hanging on the porch of this house. And I just thought it was so awesome because it was very far from New Mexico and Mexico where I would expect to see that. So it was just really interesting to see that they had braided them also. I have seen my mother braid those chicos and hang them on the clothesline. And it takes at least a week, maybe 2 weeks, for them to dry. And then you have to chuck them and take them off the cob and put them in. She always put them in either a can or a plastic bag. Today we use plastic bags, no? But we used to use a can and put the Chicos in there. And then you just cook them like beans. You take a cup of Chicos. If you want to make a cup of Chicos, it's the same kind of measurement as beans. To make your cup or 2 cups of Chicos, it makes the same amount of pinto beans.
So actually, from what you said, Irene, it sounds like after they're ready, you can just eat them without even doing anything with them.
Yeah, when you take them out of the horno, they're like corn on the cob.
Well, you know what it just reminded me, and I haven't even seen them or eaten them in a million years, but they used to sell corn nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Is that so? That's based, you know, very salted.
The corn nuts are very much like the pozole corn. It's a bigger corn.
Yeah.
Whereas the Chico is, if you're using sweet corn or the white corn that Mom was talking about, concho means to me that it was like shell like, and there's some corn that is shell like the popcorn, and so what it does, it is a really tasty corn, but the corn nuts is shaped more like the pozole corn. And I've always wondered about that and have never studied whether the pozole corn and the corn nut is the same.
Gloria, why don't you talk to us about, I know you love Chico soup.
Yes,
making soup
love
from Chicos.
Chico. It brings back memories just like all soup, you know, it's warming, it's delicious, and we used to make it with beans. Grandma did also, and what it does is it sweetens things up. The corn is really sweet that you eat with Chicos, but it's a comfort food, just like probably chicken soup for some people when they have a cold. When we have a cold, we like to have chicken soup, and the same thing with this. You know, it just on a winter's day, whenever it's cloudy, it's nice to have Chicos.
Well, tell us about making Chico soup.
Okay. Well,
your recipe for
my recipe is mainly copying what I've learned. And yesterday I made some just to remind myself how long it takes, and it takes hours. It takes hours for the corn to get soft because it's a very hard corn. And this is not to advertise for anybody, but if you're going to buy Chicos, make sure that it's the teeny ones, and that I know that Casaus makes a really good Chico out there. And sometimes you can get a corn that isn't sweet and that is bigger. Mm-hmm. So the Chicos take about a good 6 hours.
So in other words, do you soak them in a pot of water?
I actually put them straight into the water that I'm boiling, and they boil for 6 hours. A long time. And if you're going to cook beans,
so you're always adding more water.
Always adding more water.
So you got to be
about once an hour.
You have to be really close by.
Yes.
Sort of.
Yes. I suppose that you could make it in your crock pot and not worry about that.
Yeah.
And that would take, I don't know if it would take longer on a crock pot, though, because this is a boil on a crock pot cooked slowly.
I bet it would take longer.
So what I did yesterday, it took about 6 hours. And then about an hour before is when I put in the pork and the chili, because the pork only takes about an hour. But that gives it more flavor. You can eat it without any pork and without any beans, because what is so good is the flavor of the corn. It's sweet, and it just gives a whole other taste. I don't know how to describe it other than that. It's just wonderful.
Now, I am a very lucky girl because Gloria brought me, she brought me some Chico soup, and I'm going to grab over. We're not supposed to have food in the studio, so I will acknowledge I am not opening the lid because we cannot have anything spill on this precious equipment. But is there red chili in here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's a red chili sauce?
Red chili with some pork and Chicos.
And anything else? Salt?
Salt. Salt and a few cloves of garlic.
So if people don't eat meat and they don't want meat, they can just take Chicos and they can make the red chili sauce and cook it up, and it's still going to be very delicious.
Yes, and they can also cook it with beans. It's very flavorful with beans. you know, like they do wheat, beans, black beans over rice or over corn. It's kind of the same, but in different culture.
So what do you use, pinto beans or?
Pinto beans.
Mm-hmm.
Pinto beans.
New Mexico is pinto bean country.
I know.
We can't. We can have black beans once in a while, but pinto beans, soy frijolera, that's all I can say.
We were raised with, first with juice and then with the pinto bean.
What was the first thing you said?
First we were raised with the juice of the beans.
Oh, the juice of the beans.
And then the beans later on when we could chew.
Digest them, yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Bean juice.
Bean juice.
Yum, yum, yum.
Bean soup right away.
Yeah, immediate.
It's so good.
Bean soup. So Chico soup is, although I think, was it you, Irene, that said that, or you, Glory, that that sometimes was a soup to eat during the Christmas holidays rather than pozole?
Yeah. The Chicos, yeah. We made them with patitas, corn, pig's feet or any kind of bones.
Oh, that's what patitas are? Pig's feet?
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we made them like that. And we couldn't put onions in ours because my dad didn't like onions. So we had to add them later. But, yeah, we used them with patitas and chili,
chili pod.
Chili pod we'd put in there. And then not cook, just let it cook in there. It was so good.
Mm-hmm.
They dry the pig skin, the cuerito, and that's what they would put in during the winter. Because there was, at the beginning, I don't think they canned or froze. Later on, canning came into the family, and they started canning. But at first, they would dry their food, just like jerky.
Did your family raise the pigs
and the cows.
Chickens and the cows?
Yeah.
And then your father slaughtered?
Yeah.
He slaughtered. The whole nine yards, huh?
And we had milk from the cows. And
So, Mom, the Chicos, when you would have them instead of pozole, and you said you would have that for Christmas, was it Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve, uh-huh.
And where?
We'd go to Mass. In a wagon, I remember it was so beautiful. You could see the skies, in the skies.
The
and then we'd come home to El Alto and eat there.
Who lived in El Alto?
Mimina and Aunt Mary. And all my uncles and aunts would come and we'd eat there right after midnight mass. We'd call it La Misa del Gallo.
La Misa del Gallo.
And what when you would go on the wagon, wasn't it freezing?
Oh, my gosh, it was so cold. But I remember I was a little girl. But the sky was so beautiful, all the stars and the moon and everything was so beautiful.
So how did you keep warm?
Oh, blankets.
And what else?
And make our clothes, and once in a while they'd bring rocks. Also.
What did they do with the rocks?
They warmed them in the oven, and then they'd put them on our feet, and we'd be warm. It was a lot of fun because I didn't have any sisters, and I had lots of girl cousins, so it was nice.
Did you ever miss those days, or the days of having your own animals? And I mean, in a way, that was a hard life, wasn't it?
It was a hard life. And I can say that today my brothers still farm. One of them raises sheep, the other one cows. And not cows, I shouldn't say plural. He does them one at a time. And then for butchering, and that's what we did. We'd raise them for butchering or for milk. And Daddy did do that, and I'm really proud of my brothers to keep up the tradition. And everybody still grows a garden.
And this is in Corrales.
This is in Corrales.
In Corrales. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if you drive down our road, you'll see a cow out there grazing. You'll see the sheep. You'll see the baby lambs. And they still butcher, and Mama still works with all the tripe and all that good stuff.
Mom has a pen full of chickens?
Mm-hmm, she does. So we eat fresh eggs all the time.
They're on strike now, though.
It's winter. It's cold.
Yeah. So this is Women's Focus. I want to thank you all for coming and sharing these stories. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it a lot. And Irene Tafoya, Dolores Tafoya, and Gloria Zamora, it's just been really a delight to be acquainted with your family, both through your book and also in person over the radio.
Okay.
Any last thoughts that you might want to throw in? We only have a minute or so.
Well, I know that the tradition of being together, a lot of women in our kitchen, we're always helping each other. We may not be the ones stirring the soup, but we might be making another part of the dinner, the chili or the bread or whatever. But everybody participates in one way or another, and we all bring in our special talents, and when we're bumping into each other in the kitchen, we play. We bump into each other's butts, and we sing songs, and we pinch, and we, you know, we say get out of the way or whatever. But the whole thing is playful. All we tease a lot. We have one brother that really teases a lot, but all of us tease, and there's a lot of laughter and joy.
And togetherness.
And togetherness.
I love that.
And that, I think food is what brings family together. That's our communion, should we say.
Yeah, that's very well said. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
This is Women's Focus right here at KUNM